Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to My Songs Suck, the show where we listen to bad songs from good writers. I'm Alex Smith and I'm a musician.
I'm James Keogh and I'm the friend of a musician. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to My Songs Suck. We are back with another episode. My name is James Keogh.
And I'm Alex Smith, and we have a fantastic guest with us today. We've got Nick O'Donnell from the band 26, but also, and more importantly to me personally, the producer of my EP, Guilty. And he's done a fantastic job. He's had a long and impressive career musically. But why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Nick?
This is less of a surprise now. I'm a producer, singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist. I play drums, bass, guitar, keyboard, sing and play guitar in a band called 26. We've toured around the world and done lots of good things and had some television and some radio, television in the US and radio in the UK. Along with a bunch of other things, won some awards and things like that, but I'm not going to bore you with that stuff. and I'm sure you can find a bio somewhere. Probably something wrong on Wikipedia or something like that. I've got a side project called St. Hughes, which is electronic stuff, which is the extra bits that Drew and myself from 26 write that don't fit into the 26 catalog. And I've got a few other side projects as well that I do. But these days, more often than not, I'm finding myself producing people like Alex and many others, and playing on their records and mixing their records and mastering their records even, and also helping them with marketing and things like that, because I'm also from 20 years of advertising.
Yeah. All right, cool.
So I just dated myself.
Nah, you're doing great.
And how long have you two working together, Nick and Alex?
You go, Alex.
I believe since 2016, that's when I had enough money to get in touch, because producing is an expensive but worth the money kind of business. Hmm.
It's all it's all man hours at the end of the day, as Alex found out. You know, it's producing artists is lots of working with the artist and getting the songs right, then lots of recording time. Well, the way I produce, I'm recording as well. And also mixing, so it's a long process from writing the songs, working the songs, and then finishing the tracks in the end.
Yeah,
cool. That's awesome. Well, you've brought us a track from your early years, from a while ago, one called "Walking Straight." Is that right?
Yeah, it's from a band that I was in. We were called Flood Boy. We were together for about 9 or 10 years, high school buddies. We had deals with record labels and publishing contracts and things like that. None of them ever went anywhere.
Jeez.
Warner, Festival, Mushroom, all sorts. Nothing ever really went anywhere over the 10 years. We never ended up releasing anything because it all sort of got put to the wayside because nobody was ever happy and we weren't ever happy and the labels weren't ever happy. So, but the really great thing about this was the learning curve was amazing, and pretty much everything that could happen to a band did happen to us. So it was fantastic. But what I did was, just to humor you guys, is I tried to find the earliest worst recording that we had. So we had a tape. Again, dating myself, we had a tape that we sent to the record labels, and on that tape was 5 songs, and I could have picked any of the 5 songs, and this is the one that I picked the most, the one that I picked that sucked the most to fit in
with
your podcast.
Thank you so much.
I thought it's the kindest thing I could do.
Yeah, fits the theme. Yeah, exactly. The more terrible, the better. Yeah.
Was this a song that you produced yourself? Because you said you won like competitions and were offered deals and stuff. So this is one that you made yourself?
This was something that would have probably been, well, this was, okay, we're talking, you probably weren't born, you two.
probably not, no.
This was 95-ish, 95, 96.
I was kicking around. I was three.
You were kicking around. Yeah, good. Yeah, see, there you go. So it was, well, that would have, yeah, we would have started recording some stuff on tape. I believe it was probably a recording that we did with friends. A lot of friends were going to the Conservatorium of Music, Alex.
Hey.
And they were studying Synology, it was called at the time, which was a sound technology engineering course. I don't know what it's called now, if it even exists.
That's my course. It's music tech.
Yeah, It was recording to tape back then through a big Neve console. It was a beautiful big Neve mixing console through to tape. So probably some of the stuff was done on a sampler, and then we would have recorded all of the actual, you know, drums, bass, guitar, vocals in the studio at, I'm guessing, the old con, maybe the new con. It was in the when they were transitioning from one to the other.
Nice. Well, let's take a listen, shall we?
Is there anything you want us to? Is there anything you want us to know about it before going in? Any sort of like, now bear in mind kind of comments?
Okay, I did want to say one thing, and it's something that I notice when I'm producing young bands all the time, or young singer songwriters. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I mentioned the five tracks off the tape that we made was something that young artists tend to do. Or when I say young artists, I also mean green artists as well. They tend to try to mimic everybody that they like, and they haven't honed in on what they know what they hate, but they haven't honed in on what they actually like. So they like this and they like that. And I listened to the five songs, and I could have told you we were trying to be U2. We were trying to be the Red Hot Chili Peppers. We were trying to be Boom Crash Opera, which you guys probably don't even know who they are. we were trying to be, I don't know, two other bands, and we had these five songs and we hadn't decided what we were yet. So this one was us trying to be Boom Crash Opera. And so there you go. It was us, not knowingly, but, you know, unknowingly, if that's even a word, just mimicking your favorite bands. It's what a lot of young artists do. Lots of young bands do it. So keep that in mind and you'll hear it, I'm sure, if you know what Boom Crash Opera sounds like.
All right, well, I'll check them out afterwards out of curiosity. But yeah,
Were you born yet, James?
I probably would not have been, no. If this is 95, no. Little,
you could be my son. I swear to that.
Well, Zane, if you'd like to spin Walking Straight by Flood Boy.
Tomorrow.
And that was Walking Straight with Nick O'Donnell's band Flood Boy. How do you feel, Nick?
I feel terrible. Honestly, you guys, you know how terrible I felt. You could hear me moaning and groaning as we were listening to it.
You did have some interesting comments to say during the listening.
I was
actually listening to it as a producer, you know. We're talking about producing artists and how we pull apart songs and stuff, and I was listening to it as a producer. It was very interesting. Even finding the old tapes and to send to you, I pulled them out and I was thinking, wow, there's so many things I could do with this band that they had no idea what they were doing.
Mm. Right, you're listening to it with a different ear now that you know kind of all of the pitfalls and the stuff that, you know, can easily go wrong, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because there are like some obvious thoughts that a listener might have, but also you mentioned like the hi-hat is so loud, and I was like, oh yeah, that's what it is.
So yeah, you've got them very loud.
You've got them producing ears, so you can hear them things that we can't hear necessarily.
Oh look, for a first attempt, it wasn't terrible. You know, it was when I say first attempt, there's probably recordings before that, but it was like the first tape we ever put together, and it probably wasn't terrible considering our age and our experience. But you don't put music out into the world considering age and experience. You put it out into the world against other people's music, like, you know. True. So you have
It sounds really good. Like it's obviously it's not like the best song in the world, but like when you're like, this is my song that sucks, I was like, no, grumble, grumble, this song's really good. What's he talking about? Like, it sounds very well produced.
Look, I think we had an idea at that stage. Thinking back, we were playing lots of covers gigs. So when you play other people's songs, you tend to understand structure without even really knowing it. You understand how long an intro goes for. The intro in that song was too long. You know, there's so many structural problems with that song. I mean, you think you're going to the chorus, and for some reason, I don't know why, in the first time we were supposed to go to the chorus, we sang some other bit that never happens in the song ever again. What's that about? It's very odd. The whole thing's very odd. It starts with a chorus, which is cool, I guess. I don't know what we were thinking then. Then it goes to a verse. Are you going to talk about this, Alex, or am I wrecking it for you?
No, you're doing great.
The structure is hilarious. It goes chorus, verse, pre-chorus, but then it goes to something that isn't a chorus. Then it goes back to the verse again, I think. Then it goes to a chorus that we stated right at the beginning of the song. Then it goes to a weird bridge bit that doesn't have anything happening in it, which I was telling the guys while we were listening. It sounded like all we were doing it for was the payoff of the big drop at the end, which wasn't really much of a payoff. It was a good drop, but the harmonies were terrible once we came back in. But we thought they were good, I'm sure.
Mentioned that
it goes to 17 choruses at the end of the song. Like,
yes,
just repeat infinitum.
But that was the time where everybody was telling us all these different things. Record companies were talking to us saying, "You need to get to the chorus straight away." And we took it literally. We put the chorus straight away. Or they said, you know, the chorus is the most important part. So we repeated it however many ridiculous times at the end. You know, it's just funny when you're young. You take everybody's advice, and you probably should take nobody's and just be a bit original. But anyway.
Did you feel happy with it in the way it was when you kind of first made it?
I'm sure we were stoked. You know, it's the little lie that all of us musicians tell the world because we're trying to be cool, that we just don't care, man. We just don't care. It's like, I don't care. I just release it for me. It's just for me. But the truth is, Alex, I hope you haven't said that about any of your songs. You know, it's the truth is we're all searching. Well, I believe the truth is anyway. We're all searching for music that we want to hear. It's a culmination of all of the music we've ever listened to, including when we were a kid and the music we were listening to right then when we were recording it all. And it all smashes together. And you want to make this music that it appeals to you. And when you finish it, you're so happy. Alex, you might be able to attest to this. I don't know. But I find when I'm producing records, there's the exciting bit when you first put the demo down and you get that initial, or the bed of the song, you get that rush of it feels great. And then you go through a time where it stagnates a bit and you have a funny, like, you have a funny relationship with the song. And then you hit this three-quarter mark where everything's locking together and all of the instruments are in and the final vocal's there and the mix isn't done, but you're getting a picture of the song and you get all excited again and you listen to it way too many times and you share it back and forth and, and you show your friends when it's not finished, you probably shouldn't. And then right at the end, you only get one other time of excitement is when you've actually finished it and you're just about to press it to whatever, press it to CD or send it to iTunes or whatever. You get this final rush. You listen to the whole album or the whole EP or the you listen to your single and you get all the tingles listening to it like a fan, and then you never have that feeling again.
Yeah, pretty much.
Unless you play it live on the odd occasion, you get the feeling back. You get that, oh, I remember where this song came from. I remember the horrible breakup I had, or I remember the whatever it was. But it's a lie, I think, that a lot of musicians tell themselves and the world that they don't love their music at the time. That was a really long answer. Sorry, James.
But No, it was good, man.
It was the general podcast. The general gist is, you know, I do think that musicians, if they don't love their song at the end, then why even release it? Yeah. You know. So they must do, surely. Is that right, Alex? Is that right? Are you in love with it?
Absolutely.
The day you release it, you're never going to be more in love with it than that day. And then maybe 6 months down the track, you'll start picking holes in it again or not listen to it ever again. But you're in love with it that day, aren't you? You just
absolutely
are gushing.
I like the point where, because, you release it and then after a bit of time, you listen to it a bit more critically and you're like, oh, here are all the things wrong with it. And then if you leave it for like a year or so, then you forget because you're too close to it.
Yeah.
And then you forget all the little nitty bits and you listen to it like just a fresh set of ears and you're like, yeah, this is pretty good. Like I'm just starting to be able to listen to Crazy Days again, being like, yeah, it's a bit of a bop. Whereas Guilty, I'm still like, oh, and like remembering all the stuff that I did and being like, oh, why did I write this? I should have had like a different thing here, you know?
Guilty is a great EP, so you shouldn't beat yourself up about it. It's fantastic. It's really good. Sure. And it's so Alex Smith, it's not funny. And that's all I was aiming for when we were working together was just whenever I work with an artist, I want to try to get them onto record. I want to try to get them like them, their essence. What is it that
their
they
unique
do?
Sound, yeah.
Because there's nobody else that can be. I was saying this to somebody the other day. It might have even been you, Alex. I can't remember.
I think so. We're talking about your podcast.
But I was just saying it's really, there might be a better guitarist than you. There might be a better singer than you. There probably is. Unless you're running a 100-meter race, there's no best in the world. So you're the only thing you can be is the best version of yourself. And nobody else can be you. Nobody else can be Alex Smith. Nobody else can be Nick O'Donnell. You know, so it's what, so I'm always looking for the essence of somebody on a record. Now, the essence of going back to your song Sucks, trying to bring it back for you guys, the essence of that band, Flood Boy, at that time, that when we recorded that song, was four really green school friends that were trying to write songs, and we were playing lots of covers gigs, so all of our songs sounded like covers of bands we liked. You know, that's one of the other things that I notice about young bands is not only do they try to write all of their favorite artists' songs, versions of, but they also, if they're playing a lot of covers, they tend to, the songs sound like covers.
Yeah, they absorb them. Yeah.
They absorb all of the progressions and absorb all the melodies and things, and they start to sound very generic at first.
You mentioned they sounded like that band, which I've already forgotten. Opera. That's the one. But I actually wrote down that I thought they sounded very U2. U2, I thought.
Well,
yeah.
That's interesting you say that because that was probably our biggest influence. And probably from a band point of view, from what I do now, U2's probably like it's probably the blueprint of what I do. U2, really, in the grand scheme of things, U2's blueprint is the Beatles. It's four guys in a band where the band matters and where the songs matter, you know. And you look at all of the four-piece guy bands, they're all really just a blueprint of the Beatles. And so I guess I got to the Beatles through U2, but we were very heavily influenced by U2. They had the aesthetic that we liked, and also they weren't overly virtuosic players, and we liked that because we weren't virtuosic players. So we were really endeared to them. They were very much from that punk movement that came out of the late 70s into the 80s. And I mean, I'm even a child of that era in a way, because my brothers listened to that music as well. So, yeah. Okay, I want you to pull it apart, Alex. I don't want to run this show anymore. I'm talking way too much.
Right. Well, I've got good notes and other notes.
I've got the good news. Do you want the good news or the bad news?
Oh, yeah. Well, would you like the good notes or the other notes?
I want them all. I think it's hilarious. We're both producing this young band together. We're co-producing this young band together. Go.
Well, it's got a very polished sound for where it is, considering it's a very, very good demo track. It's like, if this were a band presenting me with this demo track, I'd be very impressed just at like the quality of it. Really good energy. It's a bop. I like it. I've written good structure, but since the conversation we've had, I've realized it's actually not at all good structure and I'm a dingus. But the bad things is that it's a bit repetitive, but totally. Mainly the end. We kind of hit that chorus groove and just kind of stay there for the rest of our lives. A little bit of mixing stuff. And it's better to listen to it with headphones to pick this up, because I listened to it on my phone speakers the first time and I was like, this sounds great. But if you got your good sweet headphones on, there's just some level stuff. Like, I think the vocals sound a little bit dry. Like, they don't quite sit in with the rest of it. And bearing in mind, I'm not a producer, so I could be saying like the exact opposite of what the problem is. But I'm trying to improve my mixing ears.
I think most of it, you know, a lot of the times you don't realize that, you know, you can pick all of the mixing things in the world, but a lot of the times it's just the performance isn't great. Like, the reason why the vocals stick out to me is because all of the vocals are sort of out of tune. Then none of them are quite in tune with each other. So then you think that it sounds dry because you want it to be wet to drown out all of the horrible, you know, the horrible tuning and stuff. It's an interesting thing, but keep on going. I love it. This is fun.
Also, James, do you know what dry and wet means?
I don't actually know what dry or wet means.
So a dry vocal is a vocal that's been untouched, mainly. Like, not untouched, but just
no
like
no reverb, no delay.
Yeah, no reverb. Gotcha, yep. And the wetter a vocal is, that's usually it refers to reverb. But like reverb, delay, or I think any kind of effect. But I don't
sometimes
really know. Like,
people can get a little bit confused because delays can sometimes sound like reverb. But at the end of the day, so the difference between reverb and delay, James, if you want to really strip it down, is reverb puts you in a space, like as in it makes you feel like you're in a room or in a hall or in a tunnel. And delay is that echo effect that, you know, repeats on itself. So it's like it can be a quick slap, like it can be a quick slap like Elvis, like a da-da, or like John Lennon, like Beatles is very quick slap delay, like da-da, like that. And a long delay is quite often timed to the song, like so the singer might go da 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 like that, so then it's in time with the song, or it's in quarter notes or in eighth notes, or what you can time it differently, or it can be completely out of time with the song. But that's when people say a wet or dry vocal, usually that means how much reverb and delay it has or doesn't have on it. So
cool. It's cool that there's so much to that and how much that influences in little ways that someone wouldn't be, like someone like myself would not be able to pick up. But the degree to which you do that, like, obviously affects so much of the song and is noticeable to a producer's ears. That's cool.
Well, it's what you're trying to do when you're producing a song mixing a song. You're trying to highlight what it is that the song's about, and you're trying to put the person in the room with that song. So if the song's an overly, if it's a moody song and it needs to be somber, et cetera, you don't want it to sound bright. You don't want the vocals to be too bright. You don't want the mix to be too bright. You don't want the reverbs in the room sounds to be too bright. You want everything to be a bit dull and dark sounding. And if you want something to sound happy, you have brighter sounds, brighter reverbs. Maybe, you know, you can put somebody in a space by having more reverb or less reverb. Then there's all sorts of tricks that you can do that where you can, I can manipulate the way that you are thinking by having a drier vocal in the verse but a wetter vocal in the chorus. So it makes you all uplifted because it feels like the room's opened up all of a sudden and it sounds like the singer's singing louder and it's exciting the room more, but I've just put more reverb on the voice and it's really quite controlled. So that's what you're always after when you're producing a song and mixing a song. You're trying to find out what the key to the song is, find out what the thread that goes through and what the story is and how you're supposed to feel, and then try to make that with – you're trying to cover all of the four or five senses with one sense, which is hearing.
And what would you say with Walking Straight, what would be that – if you were producing that now, what would be that kind of thread that kind of sounded?
Okay, so it's trying to be a – I guess the lyrics, God, I can't really remember what the lyrics are about, but it's basically, I think it was about what we were doing when we were 18, 19, 20, drinking and having fun times, you know? I think it was about, you know, sort of stumbling around drunk and not having a care in the world. And also probably the verses were about questioning what you were going to do with your life or something. I'm guessing, without analyzing them. So, yeah. You know, that you'd have a... You'd have a produce it with a brighter party vibe, you know. It's obviously an up song, as Alex said, it's quite boppy. So, you know, brighter reverbs, brighter room sounds, brighter drum sounds, etc. Yeah. So, I mean, it was kind of there, but again, it's the performance that lets it down more than anything, and the song structure and things like that. But anyway, do you have any more, Alex? I'm really interested. This is fun. It's like you're producing my shit band when I was a kid.
The roles are reversed.
It's great. Like some sort of revenge. It's production revenge.
Well, I feel like I run the risk of making a fool of myself because I don't know hugely about production. I'm a song structure boy. I'm a lyric and chords and song structure boy, I can't really do the tweaking and like the stuff to make it actually sound good, which is not a good trait in a musician.
it's actually not uncommon. It's completely a common thing. It's taken me a long time to know all of these things. It's taken me the 9 or 10 years of a failed band and multiple recordings over multiple years. And then doing 20 years of recording on my own home setups, starting from 4-track tape, moving into computers, you know, crappy PCs onto Macs, and gradually getting better and better setups, and thinking about all of these things that we just talked about, you know, how the mood of the room changes the lyric, what's the lyric about, talking to the artist, asking them how they were feeling at the time. Asking them, is there a place or a cinematography to what their song is? Like, is it about driving on a sunny day with the top down? You know, is it about a dark night and it's just started pouring down rain on me? Or is it, you know, it's putting you in the place. It's putting you in the place of the song. I heard somebody really... I heard a really great quote from a producer that I'm going to completely butcher, but the idea was people were discrediting what production does for a song, saying that, you know, the song's the song and it doesn't matter how you produce it. And the producer said, no, I don't believe that. I believe that the song gets you half the way there, but the recording and the production puts you in that place. So the recording and the production it doesn't just, the song takes you back to 1985, but the production and the recording take you back to the autumn day where it's misty and cold. Mm. And, you know, and that's what you're adding. You're augmenting what the song's about and you're taking it to the next level. Because people don't remember the song. People remember the recording. And it's all attached. It was actually the singer from Smashing Pumpkins that was saying that. He was saying, you know, he was talking about how he's now gone back to playing all of the old songs the way they were recorded, because his fans have a relationship with the way that sounded and it takes them back to that time. And what he was doing was robbing them of that nostalgia by playing it differently to how it was recorded.
Hmm.
So I thought that was a beautiful way of describing what it is that I do now, which is producing.
Yeah, like, definitely.
You've given me, whether intentionally or not, you've said one of the biggest life lessons that I live by, which is the difference between bad and good is great, but the difference between good and great is tiny.
Yeah.
Which is now why I'm a pedantic fuck all the time, much to James and Curtis's chagrin when it comes to creative processes.
Oh, that's good.
Because I'm always like, no, the difference is tiny.
You gotta do what it takes to get right.
It shows, though. If you put
in
like,
I would say as a caveat to that, though, Alex, is what I would say, though, is your definition of great needs to be not correlated to your definition of perfection, because great isn't perfect. Great is something that makes, especially in music or in art, great's not perfection. Great is what makes you most moved, what gets the most rise out of people or the most emotion out of people is great. So
I have found that quantized, auto-tuned, perfect stuff is like totally lifeless. And like you said, it's all the tiny mistakes that make something great.
It's the nuance.
Which is wild, because you'd think it'd be the opposite.
Well, I think there's a reason why people don't sell as much music. Now it's the internet and all of those things, but it's also the fact that everything sounds generic. And that's not just old person speak. It's music's getting more and more generic because everybody's using quantizing and pitch and vocal tuning and using perfect recordings of pianos and things that have been sampled beautifully, but they're all perfectly in tune. And once they play it in themselves, I should also explain what quantizing is for the people that don't know, is that it's putting everything perfectly in time. Perfectly in tune. So you're robbing the listener of all of the things that you actually love about an artist is their imperfection. So I'm actually on a real push to try to make music, especially rock music, but, you know, alternative music, let's say, make it more believable again, make it more real.
It was a bit of a struggle, but Guilty was 100% legit, and that was something that we prided ourselves on, which was tricky when I wasn't necessarily great at singing all the time, so it'd just be many, many, many hours in the booth getting the takes.
Yep, and one of the biggest things for a singer is psychology. It's getting out of your head and not beating yourself up, because it's the hardest instrument to record. Because if a guitar goes out of tune, you say, hey, wait up, guys, I've just got to tune the guitar. If your voice starts going out of tune or cracking, or you start getting in your own head, the muscles tighten up. And singing in tune is all about getting muscles to be right. Is when I want to sing a C, then my muscles my muscles can tell what they have to do to make a C or a D or an E or whatever it is. The muscles have been trained in a way that they know how to do that. And if you're not healthy, if you haven't slept, if you're in your own head and you're beating yourself up, everything changes and it tightens up, and then you can't sing in tune. And then the more you can't sing in tune, the more you can't sing in tune. And it's just it's a horrible thing. But I'd rather get it right than tune it, you know, because people know. Even if you don't know, you know. That's the that's the scary thing about it.
I have an interesting question for a music person. Are you ready?
Okay, go.
Is when
this for me,
was,
or are you asking
this
James?
Is for you. This is for you.
I am not
talk.
A music person. All right, I'll ask the question
then. No. Okay, Alex, go. Go. You go. And then James, you go.
All right, great.
I got shut down.
Interesting question. Go.
I was going to say, when was your big break?
There is no such thing.
If you had to say you had a big break.
Yeah, no, there. I don't believe in big breaks, but okay. So the biggest one, the biggest thing that I could see as career changing was having the song on American television, having a new beginning on American television. That allowed us to do a bunch of other things. But in saying that, if we didn't do a whole bunch of other things and small successes one after the other, little successes one after the other, we wouldn't have had the opportunity to get on the American television. So one of the biggest mistakes musicians make is they think that there is this big overnight success moment, when the truth is persistence is the thing that makes a music career, and it's daily persistence and it's small wins. It's not big wins. One of the things my partner, she always says to me, you never get excited about anything that good that happens. I've been doing it for long enough to know that it's not, there's never necessarily a big win. It's the big win, the small win affords you another opportunity to have another win or a loss or whatever you do with it. So, yeah, more and more I'm realizing that it's the persistence that's the thing that gets you a career. It's not the one thing. It's not the, and this is why I have so many problems with those singing shows, etc. Because you hear people say, oh, this is my last chance. I'm 22 years old and I've been doing music all my life. And you go, all your life isn't even as long as I've been doing it as a grown up, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're 22 years old and you haven't even lived yet. So you haven't been doing it all your life. You've only been doing it since you were about maybe 13, which isn't that long compared to many other people. And this isn't your last chance. This is only a chance to get a little bit of recognition. And then even if you won the thing, you still got to work your butt off to get the next opportunity. Like, you think of all the people that have won or come second or top 10 in any of those singing shows, and it's only the ones that have worked their ass off afterwards that have got anywhere. It's not the ones that have gone, yay, I won, now it's all going to come to me. So that's the way I look at all of the successes.
They're did you ever have a
small?
Oh, sorry.
Go for it.
I was just going to ask, in your particular path where you're getting these small successes, did it ever seem like there was a time where you weren't kind of going on that path, and did you ever want to give up?
Funnily enough, the only time, and I don't take it, I was thinking about this. I always think about this moment. I've never actually wanted to give up. And this might sound rather macabre, but I can only correlate it to something that I can only imagine somebody would think about. If somebody is thinking about taking their life, they've thought about it, maybe the process or whatever. I am not a person that can actually, I don't know if this makes any sense, this analogy, but I'm not actually a person that can even contemplate that. So it's the same with music for me. The truth of me is I couldn't even contemplate music not in my life, but I did have a down moment. And oddly enough, this is not a fabrication of time and truth. This is the absolute truth. I went and saw one of my favorite bands, Elbow. They're from the UK. They are also good friends of mine now, particularly the drummer. I do a little side project with him that we're working together on. And they're like one of the UK's biggest bands, still are to this day. And I went and saw them before I met them. And I had that experience, which many young musicians had. Alex, I'm sure you can attest to this, where at first you're inspired by a band when you go and see them. And then as you get older and more experienced, you see a band and they're so good and you go, oh shit, I'll never be that good. I may as well just give up. I don't know if you've had that, Alex. You might be overly confident or confused or something like that. But
no, I've
had
that.
I've had it many times. So yeah. I went and saw Elbow. They were amazing. I got up the next morning, probably didn't have enough sleep, probably drank too much as well the night before, and I got up in a foul mood and I thought, that's the closest I ever got to, maybe I should just not do it anymore. And that is literally the exact day we got contacted by the people from NBC to put the song on American television,
which went out to 20.
It went out to 25 countries, and I think it got seen by about 25, 26 million people.
That's incredible.
Jeez. So, fate, you know, it's
stepping in.
Yeah, but that's the closest I've ever got, and it wasn't really the truth. It was just me being down on myself going, oh, maybe I should just not bother. But no, I've never thought about selling my gear or anything like that. No, nothing like that. I think if it's in you, it's in you. I think if you don't have that persistence in life as a musician, you know the person that did music at high school and wanted to be in a band and then they gave up, you know?
Yeah.
There's probably hundreds of them in your life, or okay, maybe tens of them in your life that were a musician that loved music, that all they ever did was talk about music, and then they became a grown-up and they thought, oh, I'm going to sell my guitar now. I never play it anymore. And then there's the rest of us. And you're not going to throw the rest of us off if we're committed to a life of music, even if it's just a hobby. You know, there's plenty of 50-year-olds that have guitar collections that love just sitting in front of their amp and playing guitar every weekend. You're not going to stop that person from loving it.
Well, do you have any tips for those people who are still hanging on, or any of those starting songwriters or producers? You're a very good producer guest. We've had a few musicians, but you're a skilled, seasoned, excellent producer. What would you have to say to someone starting out? I can understand this is putting you on the spot a bit as well.
I sort of shy away from these sorts of things because there's no magic bullet. I think what's a lot of younger, green people are looking for is just do this, this, and this, and everything will be great. But that's just not the truth. Like I said, the truth is persistence and small wins and a bunch of failures. The music industry, or making music and releasing it, is so much easier than it used to be. When you wanted to release music before, because studios, I mean, we were talking about, you know, the cost of me producing and mixing a song, Alex. I used to spend, the band that I was in, we used to spend $10,000 a song.
Jeez.
So, and it was either us doing our full-time jobs in order to pay for that, or it was a record label that you could get interested enough to pay for some demos. But that was the reality of the time you'd spend in a studio back then, you know? So it's persistence, it's small wins, it's thinking laterally, it's a bunch of things that I could go into them and you know, go into heavy detail, but really it's not something you could cover on a podcast. I really hate to think that there's people out there thinking that they can go on a singing show and then they're going to be made, or once they've finished their album, everything's going to be great and everyone's going to love them. You know, there's just too many things that you've got to do all in the one go. One thing I can say though, for sure, is if you keep on doing something daily and you keep on chipping away at it, it's obvious. If you do three things a day, or two, even one thing a day, you're going to be far closer to something happening than if you do nothing in the day. So, you know, and also one thing I've noticed, anytime we've had management or agents or anything like that, we've had agents and management in the US and the UK and in Australia, anytime I've dropped the ball and not been the person pushing for my career, and I've thought that they would do the job for me, I was completely misguided in that thought, and it just fell apart. And then you'd spend all that time crawling back, trying to get back the momentum you had before you were with that manager or agent, etc. Yeah. So, you know, it's calling the venues and hassling the venues for a gig. It's It's, you know, contacting publishers and contacting, not even doing that necessarily anymore, but, you know, getting your songs up, getting, being on social media, all of those things together, all of those things combined make a career. And if you don't do them all, then somebody else is, and they're the people that are making careers. So it's persistence and a daily connection.
Are you still persisting in your career, or have you reached kind of a point where you're doing exactly what you want to do?
Oh God, that's a good one. That's the other thing I can say is the old man in the room is, the other thing you don't realize about it, your music career, if you're going to continue it, is that it will morph from one thing to the next. And you can either push back and try to be a rock star forever, or you can find yourself in a different position. So I'm still making my music, and if the opportunity presents itself, I'll be out playing live again, etc. But I got asked by a bunch of people because they heard my band's music and they found out I recorded it and mixed it and produced it to produce and mix and record them. And so I found myself through just a fluke of life that I'm producing and mixing other people's stuff and absolutely loving it. So it's sort of just taken a priority. So now I'm just pushing that and working at that daily. It's getting me some good money, and it's, I'm still doing music. I played all over Alex's record. I play all over all of the people that I work with. So, you know, I still get to exercise my instruments, and I even sing backing vocals on some of Alex's stuff, and I do that regularly on other people's things. So, yeah, it always changes. You never know what's going to happen.
And fantastic.
Yeah, just keep on moving. You just keep on moving forward and sideways and in three different directions at once.
Seems like you've come a long way from walking straight.
This guy.
Wow. Jesus, that was Christ. That was a dad joke. Are you sure?
Thank you.
Yikes. Wow.
Alex, did you have anything to add?
I think that pretty much put an end to it. I don't really want to continue after that.
I did kill the conversation. You're right. Yeah.
It was a good pun, but I don't think anything could top that. That was so quick. Look, we are coming to the end of the episode. Is there anything that you, is there anyone you want to try and get on the show next to interview? Because you got many fingers and many musical pies. Who do you reckon we should try and get in for the episode? And we will say thank you for being on. I just feel like that's kind of an end kind of comment. But yes, thank you for being on.
Well, thank you. It was a delight. I hope I didn't talk your ear off, all of you.
That was great.
Started on music, I just talk.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of insight. It's great.
Yeah. It's just a crude knowledge over a long period of time and doing lots of things. That's the other thing that a musician can do is just be informed, talk to all, you know, do all of the things that a manager would do once you get to the point of that. Make sure you've booked gigs yourself. Make sure you've organized back lines at gigs and make sure you've learned how to write and make sure you know how to register your songs with APRA and do everything so that then when you do have a manager or an agent or something, you can actually ask them the right questions. Hopefully you get to that stage and then you can say, hey, what's happening with our royalties on that song placement in the States? When are we seeing that? What, have you chased that up? You know, you know what you're chasing. You're not flying blind. So, I mean, it's a different game now. A lot of people are doing everything themselves anyway. So, but it's just good to be over everything. That's how you've got to have a music career. Just know what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Do you have anything coming up? This episode goes out. When does it go out?
I think 11th, May 11th.
May 11th. So do you have anything to plug, anything you want to let the audiences know about, Nick?
Well, I will have. I keep on promising the guys in the band that I will have a 26 record at some point this year. Cool. I think that might be pushing it. St. Hughes is on the St. Hughes, our electronic project, is on a year off so that we can finish 26. The good thing about being in the in a side project with the person in the band is that you can put things off. And the other thing that I would love to plug from a production, mixing, mastering point of view is and songwriting, et cetera, is I've started doing all my production work, and I'm also starting a podcast soon. So look out for it. It's called Make Music, Not War. You'll be able to find links in the podcast notes. I'm hoping I've sent you those. And yes. I've just started up a Facebook page, an Instagram page, et cetera, and all my production and stuff, mixing will be through that. But also there'll be a podcast shortly where I'll be interviewing a bunch of people, hopefully getting less jibber-jabber than my episode of The Song Sucks. And hopefully what the podcast is going to be about is trying to get to the bottom of production and songs and the emotion side and the psychology, rather than just the what gear do you run through and how much reverb you use and et cetera. It's going to be less about the gear and less about the tricks and more about the psychology of music.
Fantastic. Mm. I'm really excited to listen to it.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Well, that'll about do it for us, I'm pretty sure. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to Nick, of course, for coming on.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you can find us on Facebook, My Song Suck. We're on Instagram, My Song Suck. Twitter, My Song Suck.
I think it might be My Song Suck Podcast.
My Song Suck Podcast. It shows how much I know. And thank you to That's Not Canon for having us on the show. And Alex?
Well, yeah, if you wanted to hear Nick's fantastic work, you can check out Your Man Alex Smith on Bandcamp, Spotify, and iTunes. And Guilty is the one that Nick worked on. I've also, if you wanted to see me and James in the Flesh World, we'll be at the Milk Factory on May 18th.
We will.
Which will be next Friday when this comes out. And I'm going to be playing a gig. I'm going to have my full band. It's going to be sick. Not including some terrible calamity from the time of recording to now. But that's the plan.
Hopefully.
Can I just say one more thing, Alex?
Following up
from what you're saying is I work with a bunch of independent artists. And if you follow Make Music Not War on any of the different social medias, I'll be making sure that each of their stories is on that page as well, those pages as well. Because one of the things that I find is you make music with these people and then that might be the end of it. And one of the things I wanted to do is make sure that everybody I worked with, their story was heard, their songs were heard, people actually got to listen to their music. So I'll be pushing artists that I work with all the time and just saying, hey, this is Alex. He does great stuff. Here's his EP, et cetera.
Thank you. Well, yeah, if you let us know how your project goes, we'll keep the My Song Suck people up to date with what you're doing as well.
All right. Fantastic. Well, we'll leave you all with another song. This is
A New Beginning. This is Nick's song that was featured on the NBC police procedural drama Life. This was the big song.
Fantastic. Well,
did you have anything brief to say about it, Nick?
No, that was the big song. It's not the newest song that I've written, but it was the biggest. So there you go. Have a listen. It'll make sense, hopefully.
Well, let's listen up and we'll see you all next time. Thanks.
See ya.
Cheers. Getting a thing.
myself and fail.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.